Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast. In this show, we discuss the rapidly advancing digital marketing industry and how to grow a profitable marketing agency with some of the best minds in the space. Since 2015, Tyler Narducci has been building and scaling his own digital agency, helping businesses grow and market their services and products through online advertising. Now, he's helping other startup digital agencies launch and scale rapidly to six figures with the Done For You Agency Program. If you're interested in taking your agency to the next level and skip all those painful mistakes most have to make by learning directly from those killing it in the digital agency space, then apply now at dfyagencyprogram.com/scale. That's dfyagencyprogram.com/scale. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. Now, let's dive into today's episode.
All right, everybody, welcome to the next episode of the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Narducci, and I have with me today, Greg Kirkham. Greg is the CEO of Wells Digital Media, a marketing and consulting agency. Greg has scaled three of his own companies with seven-figure combined exits and has worked with many major companies from Fortune 500 to Fortune 100 level. Greg is currently the fractional CMO for four companies that have a total valuation of over $500 million and is the head CMO for Meetopolis, a new online dating and coaching experience. Greg was also the president of two solar companies and the co-founder of a third. He does this all while hosting Adweek's Daily Brief Marketing and Beyond segment and scaling his own digital marketing agency. And I'm very proud to say that Greg is also one of our Done For You Agency elite members. Greg, your credentials are quite impressive. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we will just dive right into the episode today. Greg, so seven-figure exit, that sounds really ambitious. It sounds amazing. But for most new business owners that are looking for a way to replace or supplement their incomes, what would you say would be the first step that they could take, while they're working to just get their business established and moving in the direction of, you know, a seven-figure exit?
Yeah, definitely. When you're first starting your agency, make sure that you're listening to the people who have done it before. Learn what works really well, and then build out processes while making it your own, right? There's nothing, nothing might be a strong word, but one of the worst things that you can possibly do is not be genuine to yourself, your messaging, and the people that you're really trying to impact.
Yeah, 100%. You have to be you, and you have to, you know, what you said in the beginning there, follow the path of, you know, proven success, I think is so vital. We all learn from somebody, and you can take, I guess, the short road or the faster road by just, you know, linking up with people and programs or coaches that have done this before, or you can try and learn everything yourself, trial by error. And, you know, that it can be a little bit treacherous as you're going along. How can agency owners start to gain traction when they're talking about scaling their business?
Find your voice. First, find your voice, learn what your potential client actually needs, and then lean into it. You know, might be going one way, down one path, and then realize that you're on the wrong path. Right? You need to find your strengths and lean into those strengths, and then leverage the network that you have, leverage the experiences that you've gained, and then really lean into it and find out what's going to work and actually produce revenue for your business.
Yeah. When you say find your voice, I think, on another episode, I was talking with Annika about copywriting and everything. And she was talking about how one day she really just, but in the beginning, she really wanted to have, you know, Moxie be her agency and like the name and branding, the All Moxie or whatever. But she says that when she finally like got over that fear of becoming the face of her agency and like putting herself out there, you know, as, you know, the copy, you know, queen essentially, and going after that whole lane, that her agency was able to, you know, really ramp up revenue and everything. And I think that was kind of, you know, a really good example of like finding your voice, right? It's like not being afraid to become the face of your brand, you know, if that can add, and in many cases in the agency space, it definitely can, like, you know, owning, you know, your lane, your channel, whether that's, you know, the service that you provide and often who you provide it for, meaning your niche. So, you know, I would completely agree on the whole finding your voice thing. It does take, and I think it also does take time, like you said, like looking at the services that you're doing and finding out what you like, what you don't like, and leaning into the things that come natural to you, you know, and not just trying to force it because you think that's what needs to be done, but trying to find, you know, where that sweet spot is of, you know, being the voice and finding those things that you like doing, and that it just kind of flows a little bit better. At least that's what happened in my agency. I started out viewing, you know, a lot of just social media stuff because I loved, you know, being on social and I loved the content creation side. And so I was really leaning in and doing that. And then I kind of shifted into paid ads and learned that whole world and really learned to love paid ads. I only very recently, like within the last year, stopped doing my own paid ads because I just enjoyed that part so much. So when you find that thing that you do like, I think it can make your business a lot more enjoyable and easier to scale. Yeah.
And your potential clients or the audience can sense when you're not being genuine, right?
Yeah.
If your messaging feels strained, if they feel, if it's received from a perspective of like, this guy's just another one of these thousands of agencies that's been approaching me.
Yep.
Not gonna, why would they choose your agency, right?
Totally. You know, what the big risk you run in doing this is like, it's in the sales process, right? So where that whole like, oh, these guys are just some other agency trying to get my money, that comes up on the sales call. And in that, there, you know, in the DFY agency program, we teach two call close process. Call number one is discovery. Call number two is where the pitch happens. And there's so much importance in that call number one discovery, because that is your call to build rapport, let them know who you are, and really convey to them that you genuinely care about the results that you're going to get for them, and that you genuinely care to help them grow as a business, and that you're not just looking for their money, not just looking for, you know, a few retainers, and then spend them out like so many other, you know, bad agencies in the marketplace right now. So I think, you know, your time to shine and be genuine, like you're saying, it's really short, and it's in that first call when you meet them.
Yeah, it's, you know, with every business, they may have 10, 20, 30 agencies approaching them on a weekly basis, right? Or monthly basis, whatever it might be. For me personally, with my agency, what we've done because of the consultancy side, right? Like we started off as a consultancy for the past 15 years. What we do is we offer the initial value immediately. Right after the initial consult and on the second call, we've already built out a strategy.
Yeah. Right?
It's not necessarily something that everybody needs to do, but if you can build the value in your agency and build the trust between you and the potential client,
they're
more likely to go with you. You know, people buy from people that they like and that they trust.
Yeah. That's why I say like, we offer a sales script that helps give you a guideline on what you should be talking about and when in general terms. But I'm always like, guys, don't read the script word for word. Like, don't sound like a robot. Like you need to have a human conversation. You need to make a real human connection. And you need to really be, you know, in many cases, shutting up and letting them actually talk about them and their business and what's going on so that you can really connect. Because people, at the end of the day, like people want to be heard and they want to be understood. And, you know, business owner that's, you know, maybe been burned by a few agencies, which is really common these days. They want to have those concerns heard, and they want to feel that those things aren't going to happen again, right? And it's on us to really make that connection, uncover those pain points, and, you know, really land that, you know, more emotional connection that gives them the trust that, you know, you're not just going to be another agency that does that, that you are going to care about them and that you are going to do what you can do to A, provide value and, you know, ultimately get them the results that they're after.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and especially when you're working with scale, right? For me, at least, what I prefer we do on the initial call is basically just shut our mouths, ask those key questions that are going to be able to help guide on the second call or through the the other consultations or meetings on a monthly basis or weekly, whatever they prefer.
Yeah.
Then shut our mouths, let them talk. You're going to get so many more people that want to do business with you if they feel heard, if you're actually listening and you actually take those things that they're expressing, and if you offer real value, right? And the more people that you can offer value to, the more money ultimately your agency is going to bring in and the higher the retention is going to be.
Yeah.
Because they trust you. So you're going to be able to grow that agency much faster than just using a script and just going off of the script constantly, right?
Yeah.
I tell my guys, ask questions and then shut your mouth.
Totally. I think, you know, if you just shift your mindset, and like mindset is such a big part of this, but like if you just shift your mindset from thinking our goal as a business is to grow our revenue and our bottom line to our goal as a business is to grow our clients' bottom line and really help them succeed in the best way possible. If you kind of make your business goals the success of your clients instead of just your bottom line first, then a lot of other things can naturally snap into place. And there's this magical thing that happens when you shift your mindset into making sure that your clients are happy. The thing that you wanted anyway, originally, which was your bottom line, is going to grow itself, right? But when you're focused on only your bottom line and driving that and not really that of your clients and what you really want for them, then things get turned a little backwards. And that starts coming out on sales calls. That starts coming across in your client, you know, communication. And then, you know, you're not able to build that rapport. You're not having those good connections. You're not trusted by a lot of people. And I think that's where a lot of things can go wrong. So if you just come from a place of being genuine, truly caring about your clients and wanting them to succeed, then a lot of things are going to fall into place, one of which being your own bottom line.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially like when you're on the sales call, it's easy to get carried away, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to offer all of these upsells, all of these other things that may not actually serve the client the best way possible, right? Yeah. You can create, I like to create a strategy, start off with the basics so that you actually understand the client. And then if you see other opportunities, add them on, offer them as an option to be able to help boost that client, but don't come from a place of selfishness and greed.
Right? Yeah. But I think we have to say that, and we have to talk about that, because there's so much of that in the space right now. Like there's so many young entrepreneurs, and like, you know, I love working with entrepreneurs. It's like my favorite thing in the world, but there's so many young entrepreneurs out there that, you know, instead of just really truly wanting to make an impact, and you know, like that's like, we need to talk about that kind of stuff, because that's what good, ethical, successful businesses are built on, right? Wanting to make a strong and positive impact in your sector is really what it's all about. It's not about, you know, cracking into, you know, a new business, knowing nothing about it, just so you can make a quick buck and get out. Like, that's not the game, right? But I feel like there's a lot of that out there. And, you know, if you want to be a truly successful business that's able to, you know, have a good impact, allow you to sleep easy at night, knowing that you're helping people. I mean, because every business that you help, they have employees, and you're helping each one of those people down the line. Like, a marketing agency actually has insane power to have incredible, incredible impact on so many people's lives. Just through one business that has, let's say, 50 to 100 employees, if you're bringing them a ton of, you know, new business and revenue, think of all the downwind people that you're helping feed and clothe and, you know, pay their rent and their mortgage. I mean, just like, and that's just one client. Now multiply that by all the clients that a marketing agency can have over the span, and you're having a real incredible impact on the economy at the end of the day, and real people's lives. And so when you start a marketing agency, these are the things that you really should set your sights on and your goals on, because that's where, you know, the real positive change is made. It's not about Facebook ads. It's not about Google ads. You know, it's really about helping your clients succeed, and then thus helping all the people that are connected to those businesses succeed, which is so awesome. Yeah. Greg, I do want to ask you, while we're talking about like scaling up an agency here and then potentially looking at, you know, exiting, which is, you know, I think a goal of many people that start up a marketing agency, I can't help but think about how agency owners are very busy. They're taking calls, they're making appointments, they're writing proposals, follow-ups, you name it. Many of them would say, you know, they simply just don't have time to strategize on, you know, specifically growth. Like, they're so buried in their own client day-to-day work. What would you say to these agency owners?
Yeah, find a way to get out of working in the business and on the business. So learn how to delegate, right? If you have the ability to make money, if you have the ability to, or you're starting to generate revenue, you've got some money coming in the agency's pocket, find a way to bring people on that know more than you. Because ultimately, I think what a lot of agency owners, where they fail is that they try to be the centerpiece of the agency.
Yeah.
That's,
and it works for a little bit. Like, it works in the beginning, right? Like, it helps you be that lone wolf that's, you know, getting like that's how I broke out of my 9-to-5, right? Is I did everything, you know, I did the sales, I did the fulfillment, I did the marketing, I did it all, right? But that you run into that wall really quickly afterward. And you're like, okay, wait a minute. I don't think I'm actually even an agency here. I'm kind of just like a power freelancer.
Yeah, you're a power freelancer, a solopreneur, whatever you want to call yourself. You are the centerpiece versus an actual business, right?
Yeah.
Once you reach the stage where you're bringing in income, like, try to put some of that income toward finding other people, finding a team, right? I try to find people that know more than I do.
Yeah.
As fast as possible. I'm talking like, as soon as I launched the agency side, within a week, I had 3 people already signed. My project manager, my sales team, and then my appointment setters, right? Those were the first stages that I took, I guess the first people that I found, so that I can scale, because I don't want to do it all.
Yeah, right? for sure. No, and I think... I had a misconception when I got into this business, and I think a lot of other people do, that you have to have, you know, a ton of revenue coming in to be able to afford those people before you bring those people in. And that's like this false narrative that we tell ourselves. And what the reality is, you can bring in these people on a per project basis and pay them with the revenue that's there demanding their presence in the first place. So, you know, bringing in white label fulfillment, bringing in contractors that can do the work, like, they're not paid until there's actually work for them to do anyway. So you can have the space and time to go and make these partnerships and put those people in place before you're, you know, getting the work. You don't, because the other way sucks. You get the work and then you're scrambling to try and find somebody to do it. That's not you. And that doesn't ever work out. And that's one of the reasons that the Done For You agency program has the pre-vetted contractors list, so that you know, and our elite fulfillment team, so that when people come in, they know from day one, they have that fulfillment taken care of, and they don't have to scramble to find anybody. Like, they have rock stars ready to A, give them case studies to market their agency with, and then B, fulfill on a dime at a much higher level than typically the agency owner can.
Yeah, definitely. Use that as an agency owner, right? You want to delegate as much as possible.
Yeah.
So the Elite program with you, with the Done For You program, right?
Yeah.
Has been a lifesaver. I can shift all of these clients over while still maintaining, accountability to making sure that I can give recommendations based off of real values, based off of real analytics, without guessing or playing the whole mind game trick that a lot of agencies go through of, oh, just wait a little longer, right?
Yeah.
Wait a little longer for the results. It's fine. It'll take another 6 months, right?
Totally.
Instead, I can give real value.
It also gives you confidence that you can, where you can sell. Like people lack a lot of confidence on sales calls, or their closers lack confidence because they're scared that if they do sell it, they may not be able to fulfill it at the high level that they're trying to sell it and pitch it as. And like, that's real. So, even just the simple thing of having those contractors in place that you know can knock it out of the park for your clients is going to make your sales process much smoother, because you're going to have that confidence. That confidence is going to come out in your voice or your closer's voice. And you'll be able to close more deals because you know that you're doing this company an absolute favor by selling them, because you know that you're going to be able to help them.
Yeah. And you don't feel like you're telling some sort of lie, right?
Yeah.
You're not lying to them. You know that results can be taken, or that they can actually receive those results, versus saying, oh yeah, we can totally do that.
Yeah.
And then you're scrambling. You're not confident that you can, right?
No. And you know what? People are so much smarter than we take them for. Like, if you're not confident in your ability to fulfill, it is going to come out. Like, you could be a great actor, but it is going to come out in the tone of your voice, in the way you say things. And, you know, when that lead on the other end of the phone hears that shakiness or that, you know, stutter or that hesitation in your speech pattern, they're going to pick up on that. And it is really sales repellent, honestly. So confidence, it does wonders for sales. And that really does come from knowing that you can knock it out of the park. Greg, how does a business owner that's working on growing to seven figures manage a work-life balance? And is there even such a thing as a business owner?
This is where it gets tricky for me, right?
Yeah.
Cause I haven't been the best at this, honestly. Like, I will work 16 hour days if I have to, but since I've become, you know, as you get into it and you become more mature with it and you understand how to delegate properly, that work-life balance becomes more realistic, right? You might work 8 to 10. Or 6 to 8, right? Right now where I am in my stage, I work anywhere between 4 to 6 hours a day, right? Because I've learned how to delegate. I think it really does come with maturity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I think it comes with maturity, like in a business sense, like getting in there and doing it. Like, you're not going to be able to reduce your work hours until you've actually learned the process, created an SOP, a standard operating procedure document, pass that over to somebody, taught them how to do it, and take it off your plate, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the nuts and bolts of removing hours of work from your day, right?
Yeah.
It's finding out, what am I spending most of my time on? And can this be done by someone else? And if it can, learning to record that process. You know, one of my favorite softwares in the whole world is Loom. A quick screen record that you can do immediately and speak over it as you're doing something. That's how I teach all of my VAs to do anything. We talk back and forth between my ads management team with Loom. Everybody uses Loom in SoBeViral, really, to just get quick, things across. And it's really great for building standard operating procedures and then slowly removing those things. But like you said, that maturity doesn't come naturally. Like, you have to do the process yourself, learn it, do it, and then pass it off. You can't hire a VA and say, hey, I need this thing done, figure it out. Like, it doesn't work like that. I know, like that poor, yeah, exactly, that poor VA. Like, it doesn't work like that. You have to actually, you know, do it, learn the system, learn the process. Again, not to just keep plugging the Done For Agency program, but in a lot of cases, we teach these processes and these systems. And you can even just give, you know, your VA or whoever else on your team access to the videos that we provide that teach these systems. And then that kind of, that pass off is a little bit easier and done for you. But, you know, that's kind of the nuts and bolts of relieving hours off of your day. And then it's like, holy crap, like, I'm 30 years old and I only have to work a few hours a day, you know, and most of it is, you know, or, you know, however old you are. I mean, you can get there or younger than me as well, but like, you know, removing, you know, hours of your day, I really think that that is huge. Because at the end of the day, like, the most valuable thing in the entire world is time, right? And getting back your time and enjoying that. So learning how to do that in your business, I think, is really the only way to go ahead and scale. Yeah. Greg, many agency owners start as freelance marketers, like we talked about earlier. How soon in the process would you say that, you know, finding a team to take the work off their plate should come into play? Like, is this a day one thing? Is this a month one? Where do you think this process starts?
Yeah, for me, it was before I even started. Right. But I was also building out the processes before I started too, because coming from the consulting world, it was, I already knew somewhat where I was going right with this. But for the regular agency owner, the person that is coming in, start from day one.
Yeah.
Start building out the processes. Even if you don't understand the processes fully, record your ideas around it. Record the concepts that you want to work with. Start building it out. Even you mentioned Loom, right?
Yeah.
Loom is probably my favorite tool because you can speak very fluidly and then you can go back and change things, right? Mm-hmm. You can change the things that maybe aren't working as well. And then you can revise it from there, but you can get a really good understanding of where people are, right?
Yeah. So basically as fast as possible, doing the processes, recording them and offloading them. I mean, I would say you're right. There's probably not a like exact, at week one, month one, like it's probably not an exact date. It's just as soon as possible, as soon as you feel comfortable offloading that process and recording yourself doing that process is probably the best time. You know, another thing I was thinking about, you know, that I definitely wanted to ask you because you've, you know, scaled and exited from so many companies, mentors. It's a huge thing that everyone talks about in the industry. You know, many entrepreneurs talk about having a mentor themselves to help guide them from the beginning all the way through. How, in your opinion, how important is having a mentor?
Oh my goodness. It's absolutely critical, right? Like not only having a mentor, but finding the right mentor.
Yeah.
Because everybody's a mentor. Everybody's a life coach these days.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, it's dangerous because you could just like fall into a trap of someone who says they know what they're doing and then it's totally leading you the wrong way. So is there a certain ways to find the right mentor?
Yeah, I would say pick and choose who you follow.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it's on LinkedIn, whether it's through the Done For You agency, make sure that you resonate with the messaging that they're actually conveying.
Yeah.
And then reach out. You'd be surprised how many people are actually willing to communicate with you that you feel are unreachable.
Totally. Right? Yeah. You could DM just about anyone. It doesn't mean they will write you back, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't reach out, right?
Yeah. I mean, even if it's, if there's one that you really, really resonate with and you see their expertise, reach out, get to know them. don't necessarily pitch them off the bat, like, hey, can you mentor me, right?
Yeah. I think one good way to reach out to them that I've seen other coaches talk about is offering them some type of value up front, yeah. Right? Like if you're good at copywriting, like offer to write them a free email, right? Like I recently had somebody reach out to me. Like I get a ton of people that want to partner with me and offers and like all types of stuff. And like, my eyes just like glaze over because there's so many that come in. But one, I stopped and I fully read and engaged with, you know, in a full email chain last week, because he came in and he was like, hey, Tyler, I see your ads all the time. You know, I see your stuff. I really like what you're doing. I think I could write you an email that would convert really, really well. Totally free. Do you want the email? And I'm like, okay, let's see it for sure. Why not? And so he sent me the email and it was really freaking good. Like I was really impressed with the copy. I mean, really, really impressed. And so I'm going to, you know, load it up and, you know, send it out, see how it performs. If it performs well, I'll totally work with the guy. I think, you know, I had another one actually reach out to me 3 weeks ago, I want to say. And he was like a local guy down in Miami. I'm based in Fort Lauderdale, and he is a video editor, and he saw my video ads as well, and said, hey, I think I can make a really good one for you. It would have a model in it. And this is what we would do. And I was like, okay. I asked him for his pricing. He was like a young guy. Like you can tell he's like just getting started. Right. But he had all these ideas and his pricing was like super low. Like if we do start working together, I'm going to coach him on like, maybe not to raise my price, but to raise his other price, to his prices to other people.
Right?
Yeah, totally. Like it brought a ton of value. Right. And so that's, you know, coming from someone who gets a lot of these like types of, you know, offers and people that want to work with me, like those are the kinds of things that stand out, right? Like when you want to provide value up front, I would say that is a good way to reach out to somebody when you want that type of relationship.
Yeah. And for me personally, I probably get 300 messages a day, right?
Yeah.
For me, I resonate really well with the people that are genuine, that actually want to know me.
Yeah.
Instead of going straight to a pitch or asking or demanding that I mentor them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly,
the worst ones that I got, like I literally laugh, was, you know, hi, I'm so-and-so and I'm the best damn salesperson you're ever going to meet. What that was like the first line. And I was like,
Oh no.
So if you're listening out there, don't do that. Don't open with that.
Please don't do that.
No. Greg, how do you know when your business is ready for a potential exit? Let's say you've had it for a few years now, you're scaling. Like at what point do you look and say, okay, maybe someone would be interested in this business?
Yeah, for me, it's usually at the point where it's self-sustained, right? I'm not the main holder, the one that everybody's relying on, right? I've delegated those tasks out. I've got consistency in the revenue, in those margins, right?
Yeah.
And then I can comfortably step out and be able to either offload it, partner, or sell. Knowing that I'm offering the true value to the purchaser, or they've got the systems in place to be able to help ramp it up.
Is there a specific revenue or profit, or is there a margin percentage and a top line revenue number that you would look for before you would even consider it, right? Like if you're making like $50,000 a month and you're profiting $20,000 a month, like I, in my head, I would just assume that that's too low at that stage. But like, at what point, you know, in your growth, is it not too low? Like what is there a magic number?
For me, I look more at the scalability of the niche.
Okay.
If it is a purchasing company that has a stronger scalability than me, that will sustain the business, but then also anybody that I'm working with along the way, right? Say, I hope that made sense. Sorry, I was on a different train. Anyway,
it's okay. You're talking about having an investor that is able to continue growing the business, right? But at what revenue number or what, you know, profit, along with what profit margin, is that investor even going to be interested in talking with you?
Yeah. So I've gotten, I exited one of my agencies right around, it was at $250,000 a month.
Okay.
And the
margins were, no, it's not it. That's, I was expecting like that it had to be even much bigger. So that's opening my mind to realize that you can sell a business that's even smaller than what I originally thought. And then profit margins at that are what?
Yeah. With any of the add-ons, any of the upsells and everything all calculated in, I usually look between a 25 to 35% profit margin on top of that.
Cool.
Now, the thing to remember when you're exiting a business is you're selling that asset.
Yeah.
Right? You're selling the potential income.
Right. It's not just about that month. It's about that, you know, month times 12 times however many years that they can continue growing it, right? It's the sustainability and the ability to continue growing, I guess. But that's incredible. So, okay. Next question on this, where would one go? Let's say they're in your shoes. Where would one go to find an investor to even begin to have these conversations?
Yeah. So as you start to scale and as you start to network with other people in your industry,
this is
something that's incredibly critical because a lot of agency owners become siloed, right? They tend to get in their own sphere and they don't necessarily network with other people as much as they should. But as you start to build out that network, other agency owners that have scaled or have already exited or are looking at an exit will put you into place or into communication with a lot of those people that are capable of purchasing it. Or say if it's another agency owner that they're doing really well, they're already at seven figures, but they don't want to exit, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll absorb your company into theirs, whether it's in a rev share agreement or a complete buyout or some sort of agreement that helps you exit out.
Yeah.
They're going to be in your networking more often than not. Because a lot of the people that are, you know, they're at that 7-8 figure mark, they're not going to be necessarily as active on social media. They're not going to be actively prospecting to purchase another agency. They're looking for people that are friends of friends or within their network that they've come into communication with to actually take that on. So it becomes more of a networking game and really who you know and what you've communicated, right?
For sure. Now, okay, talking more about the nuts and bolts of an actual exit, I guess like once you meet an investor, right, and you start having these conversations and you're showing them your books and you're showing them your numbers, does a lawyer need to get involved, I imagine, to start writing, you know, the agreements that you would come up with? Like, I imagine like you're not writing that yourself, right? So like what needs to happen then?
I would engage an attorney immediately. Once there's a real offer or potential offer on the table, when you're at this stage, you need, I don't know about you, right? But I'm not an accountant.
Yeah.
I'm not an attorney. I'm great within my sphere, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to give that responsibility to people that know what they're doing and have the best interests of both parties in mind.
Yeah.
Right? So I would shift that as much as possible. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I would definitely want to bring in a lawyer that's like well-trained and versed in acquisitions to do the process for me, because I mean, like you know, I've never sold a company. I've had to be viral from the very beginning, which is like my baby. Like, I don't even think I want to ever really sell to be viral. Yeah. I mean, at least not at this point in my life, maybe down the line sometime, I don't know. But sure. At this stage, like, I can't really ever see myself doing it, but I would 100% want to bring in, you know, a legal team to even help me, like, get the best deal, right? Like, they would know, like, really, I think you would need someone that's well-versed in acquisitions to even let you know really the true value of, you know, the business. Like, how would you actually calculate, I guess, the value of the business?
Yeah. So most of the time it's based off of the EBITDA, right? The profit after the soft and hard costs, okay. Meaning after all of the expenses. Usually we'll calculate that valuation based off of that. Now, one other thing that I highly recommend is, and this isn't just a plug because I am a consultant, but use a consultant to make sure that you're exploiting all of your areas, or exploiting might be a harsh word, but that you're utilizing all of your available resources to maximize your value and your profit potential.
Yeah, for sure.
Along with an accountant who is going to give you a true valuation of your company, and then the attorney to make sure that you're leveraging that expertise to get as much as possible for that valuation, with it being beneficial for all parties involved, right?
Yes. So let's say you said, what was the acronym to find the profit after soft and hard costs?
Yeah, EBITDA.
EBITDA? What are the letters?
EBITDA.
EBITDA. All right. Yeah. So to find your EB, to find that, your profit after soft and hard costs, right? You do this calculation, and let's say that calculation spits out $50,000 for one month, right? For just simple sake.
Yeah.
Is the value of your company $50,000, or is the value of your company then 50,000 times 12 for a full year, or?
Yeah. So I would go 50,000 for me personally, right? Depending on the market cap, right?
Yeah.
So 50,000 times 12 times 2 over the course.
Okay, so 2 years.
Yeah. So usually it's based off of 2 years, but it all depends on the market cap, meaning how many competitors are in the market, what kind of money is actually in that market for what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and then what's the potential revenue based off of market research, based off of other agencies that are doing similar things within the same vertical. Now, I might go a little overboard, though, if I'm quite frank. Like, that's...
What do you mean?
Let's be honest. It's that's probably what it is.
What do you mean overboard?
Meaning I do a lot of research into market research. I do market cap research, meaning, like, I'm going way into the depths.
I mean, I'm sure your buyer would appreciate that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Because personally, I like to err on the side of caution, or on the side of integrity with it too, right? Yeah. If, say, my profit is 50,000 per month, my calculation, they can purchase the company for, let's say, 1.2 million. But I know that that market cap has some other people that are entering into the market that's going to dilute that a little bit if we don't make some pivots internally. Then I like to disclose that personally to be able to let them know about that dilution from the numbers, right?
Got it. Okay. That's very interesting. And then I guess with that dilution, then let's say you may compensate for it down to 1 million if you're not already compensating for it with a internal business change.
Yeah.
Or you could do an internal, I guess you could do an internal business change, which lets them know that you already are compensating for that to keep it at 1.2.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and by expressing that, by stating, you know, there's dilution that's been happening. However, we've been integrating testing in the market for this other vertical or this other messaging that's resonating well with the client base. So we're compensating for that. Right now we're seeing an increase of 2% month over month, 20%, 100%, whatever it might be, right?
Yeah.
To help compensate for any of those decreases or projected decreases, then I disclose that. So then that valuation is then supported with actual numbers, right? Now, this might be a little too into the depths of what would be expected, but I like to do that just to show the compensation, because they're going to, in the discovery phase for any company that is acquiring another company, like when they're, when that company is providing their books to the purchaser,
yeah,
they're going to discover all of this anyway. I would rather err on the side of caution and just disclose all of it, plus the recovery, plus any other ongoing efforts to help compensate for it.
So well, you're like dating, and it's like also like a sales call. Like instead of selling them to be a client, you're selling them to purchase you, and you're building that trust, and being more transparent is going to help you in that case too. How do I make sure my business continues to grow after I make an exit?
Yeah. So me personally, I like to, you mentioned dating, right?
Yeah.
It's a two-way street, right? You don't know one person is just dating the other person unless it gets a little creepy, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know if that's,
that's not right. Dating. That's stalking, right?
Right.
but the individual who is selling their company, say if I'm selling a company, I'm interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing me. I'm making sure that they have a history of growth. I'm making sure that they're disclosing that they're actually capable of the purchase by a mutual exchange of the books.
Yeah.
So I don't want to sell to somebody who, they're scraping by, or they're a brand new business, but best case scenario, they can pay for the business, right?
Yeah, I think, and I've also seen acquisitions where, the seller remains involved in the business in some way, maybe as, not the CEO, or maybe as continued as a CEO, just paid on a salary instead. Like there's a lot of different ways that you can do it, I guess, to remain somewhat involved. But I would say, I haven't sold a business, but I know that if I sold So Be Viral, my baby, I'd be making sure that the person taking it was going to be able to, 100% continue to grow it and nurture it. And, I'd be doing my due diligence as well. Instead of exiting, acquiring additional agencies is also a strategy in the industry. When does it make sense to maybe consider that path?
Yeah. So when there's a mutual exchange, so I lost my train of thought with that cough. Anyway, when an acquisition makes sense, when another business has resources or lists or services that you do not offer, that they can increase the business. You can remain either in the business as an active role, like a CEO or something along those lines, or they have individuals that can step in and help the business grow.
Yeah.
So rev share agreements are an awesome example of this, right? Where maybe it's a mutual exchange where, you're being acquired or having your debts acquired, if you've accrued any, paid off in exchange for a portion of the equity or something like that, right? A full acquisition. Yeah. Anyway, that's much different.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think ideally you'd be looking to, acquire or partner with another agency or even maybe a software that can really help your clients. I think some of the best, mergers that I've seen out there, at least, in the agency space, are, you know, agencies that partner with another agency that just brings them into either deeper into their own niche or opens them up into a second niche that they can also run, or moves them into a software that all of their clients can then get on, that, you know, it's almost like double dipping, right? Like now they have the software side of the business, they have the fulfillment side of their business, and they both work together. So there's several options for agencies that want to do something like that in the marketplace. Last question here. It's something that I ask everybody that comes on my show. What is the number one? So I know I'm sure you have plenty of advice, but what is the number one piece of advice that you would give to someone that is just starting off on their agency?
I would say understand, there's so many things.
I know, it's hard to pick one.
Yeah, but I would probably say understand yourself first and then understand your customer or your client. Understand their psychology, how they think, and what is most valuable to them. And then build processes around that. Find the resources that will provide that value while remaining very, very honest to yourself and your agency and what you want to provide. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's kind of two-pronged. Like what I'm hearing when you say that really is when you say, you know, understand yourself, I kind of translate that into make sure that this is really what you want to do.
Yes. Yeah.
Like don't get into the agency space or do it because you think it's hot right now or because you think, you know, that it's easy. Because there are a lot of challenges in building an agency and maintaining it and scaling it, like especially if you want to eventually exit one day. So, you know, it's not, you know, it's definitely something that you really want to make sure that you want to do as a business. So that's what I'm getting when you say that. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because one of the worst things that you can do is to get into a niche and get really encamped in it.
Yeah.
And then realize you hate it. Yep. Like, you're going to be miserable every single day that you go.
It's true. We have members that join the Elite Denver Agency program all the time that are like, we're like, you know, what niche do you want to work in? They're like, well, you know, I've been in dental for the last 6 years and I hate dentists. So anything but that. And we're like, all right. And so they use it as like a fresh start to like get into like a different niche because they just, you know, they realize that that's not the path they want to take. So yeah. I think also in that, like, make sure that, you know, it's what you want to do in terms of the business model, but understand that, you know, you're not married to your niche. You can change it down the line anytime if you need to. But you do want to make sure before you get into the business model that an agency is the thing that you want to do, at least, because that's what's going to allow you to give it your all and be successful in the space. And then I think the part two, which you snuck in there as well, was also really know your clients and what they need and what they want, and then really build your agency around providing that and not just building your agency around Facebook ads or Google ads or the service, right? It's what I understand about what you said, that is it's about providing a solution to your clients' problems. It's not about giving Facebook ads or giving Google ads. It's about providing a well-rounded, customized solution to your clients' needs. And if you're in one niche, like say you're in insurance or you're in, you know, chiropractic or construction, whatever, generally their needs and wants are typically the same, which allows you to replicate your processes and continue to grow. So everyone recommends a niche, but truly understanding what makes your niche tick is going to make you successful.
Yeah. Well, and I would also say understand your clients or customers, right?
Yeah.
When you understand that, when you understand the psychology behind it and you take the time to learn from your client, then you're going to be able to provide so much more value to them. Yeah.
Totally. I could not agree more. Greg, thank you again for coming on the show. It was a fantastic episode.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That's going to be it for today's episode. If you're ready to take your agency to the next level and have your leads, your team, and your sales all done for you, then apply now at dfyagencyprogram.com/scale. That's dfyagencyprogram.com/scale. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. See you in the next episode of the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast.